Corinthians 11, but I will make a clarification about what I believe about it. In 1 Corinthians 11, verses 2 through 16, it says the woman ought to be covered when she prays or prophesies. So since women pray today, I believe it applies today. And here's what you ask about, Keith. Since women pray outside the assembly, they must wear the covering outside the assembly. So I agree with you on that, at least that it applied in and out of assembly. And what I mean by applying in the assembly, since they pray in the assembly, they don't lead in prayer, but I believe they should pray with the men leading them. When they pray silently with the man leading, they are praying, therefore they ought to be covered when they pray. Okay? So whether they're in or out of the assembly, I believe they need to be covered when they pray. And in principle, probably they need to be covered when they teach. Prophecy was inspired teaching, and I don't see any reason why that would not apply to uninspired teaching today. So if a lady was teaching a ladies' Bible class at my house, I would encourage her to wear the covering. And certainly if she's praying, whether she's in or out of the assembly. I think Keith and I agree. We don't agree that whether or not it applies today, but we agree that it applied in and out of the assembly. Not just in the assembly, as most of the people who agree with me on the covering teach. That's, I don't believe, to be correct. And then Keith said about 1 Corinthians 11, he said that the prophetess there, and it mentions a woman in verse 5 prophesying, that she could exercise that gift in the assembly if she was covered. Did I misunderstand you there? No. Okay. I don't believe that she could prophesy in the assembly. That had to be outside the assembly because 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 says she not to speak in the church. Therefore, she could not have prophesied in the assembly. Acts 21, verse 9, Philip had four virgin daughters that prophesied. They always did that outside the assembly. But Keith said they did it in the assembly if they had a covering on. Well, Keith, our whole debate struggles around the fact that you believe that verses 34 and 35 of 1 Corinthians 14 is only applying to the prophets' wives. Okay, but that's not necessarily the prophetesses, is it? Okay, that confuses me because it seems like 1 Corinthians 11 you're saying that they could speak in the assembly as long as they were covered. But I thought you were saying in 1 Corinthians 14 that the only ones that were saying they couldn't speak were either the prophets' wives or the prophetesses. Is that the distinction? 1 Corinthians 14 is talking about prophets' wives and 1 Corinthians 11 is talking about prophetesses? Okay, now I understand that. Okay. Ken Keith brought up again about his point about the limitations on the type of assemblies. And we dealt with that in the last speech when we talked about how his argument that he made in Faith and Facts and in his first speech that 1 Corinthians 14 deals with spiritual gifts. Chapter 11, chapter 12, chapter 13, and 14, as a matter of fact, do that. He said, I believe this is a quote, but I may have had it wrong, you cannot duplicate this assembly. He's talking about the assembly in 1 Corinthians 14. You cannot duplicate the assembly. Now, the conclusion he reaches from that is therefore verse 34 and 35 does not apply because you cannot duplicate that assembly because in that assembly people were practicing miraculous gifts. Well, again, Keith, think about the consistency of your argument. In Acts 20, verse 7, the preacher in that occasion, the one leading the lesson, was exercising a spiritual gift. Paul was a prophet. I believe, and you're sure of it, that his sermon in Acts 20, verse 7 was inspired. Therefore, according to your reasoning, that assembly in Acts 20, verse 7 cannot be duplicated. I don't believe that it can be duplicated exactly, because I don't believe we can have an inspired sermon today. But, of course, that doesn't tell me that it doesn't apply today. But by your reasoning, since we can't duplicate that assembly precisely, meaning we can't have a miraculous gift being exercised in the assembly, the things that are taught about that don't apply. You say, therefore, verses 34 and 35 do not apply. Well, by that reasoning, I maintain by that exact same reasoning, that would mean that the thing about the Lord's Supper being done on the first day of the week, that is not for us today either. Because you cannot duplicate that assembly as regarding the sermon. The sermon was inspired then. Now, that's Keith's argument, not mine. But I believe by his argumentation, Acts 20, verse 7, where we learn about the frequency of the Lord's Supper, does not apply today by the exact same reasoning he's using on 1 Corinthians chapter 14. And then I asked Keith, I said, Keith, when you have the command, let them ask their husbands at home in verse 35, is that a command, meaning this is the only alternative, or is it, one, a sample, a typical alternative, meaning really, just don't ask in the assembly? Now, I'm not sure which one of these two he believes. He believes that this comes under the category of number two, meaning it's just giving an alternative, but this is a command, or at least that's what he said. But Keith, it can't work that way. The command is this whole thing. This is the command, including this verb, or that may be really the verb. Let them ask their husbands at home is the command. Now, either this whole thing is just an alternative to the assembly, or it is a command, meaning this is the only alternative. You can't split it up, okay? It all goes together. This is one command. Paul said, let them ask their husbands at home. Does that mean that the only place is that they can ask the question is at the house and it has to be their husband? Or does it simply say that what he's really saying is, do not ask the question in the assembly? Now, I'm going to tell you one place, a typical place you can ask that question, but I don't mean to forbid other places and other people. And Keith, I know you really believe that, you believe about home, but you really believe about husbands too, even though you don't see it yet that you really believe it. Let me explain why. You don't believe it was a sin for a woman to ask another prophet other than her husband back then a question. I'm not talking about in the assembly, I'm talking about later. Let's say that her and her husband were in a situation where they were at supper at a restaurant. You don't believe it would have been a sin for that woman to ask the other prophet, the one that wasn't her husband, a question. You don't, what if there was, she was having dinner with another lady who happened to be a prophetess? You don't believe it would be a sin at that time for the woman to ask her lady friend, the prophetess, a question? You don't believe that. You said that you find other places in the Bible where they ate other than home. But don't you understand that the Bible shows that there were other people they could ask besides their husbands? For example, in Titus chapter 2, verse 4, we find a place where the older women are taught to teach the younger women. Well, Keith, are you saying, and logically that's what you were saying in your speech, though I don't really think you believe it, and I'm trying to help you see that you really don't believe that. When the older women were taught to teach the younger women, are you saying that the younger women could not, in those teaching situations, ever ask their teacher a question? And that's really what you said. You said that the husbands was a command. That was the only alternative. But home, since we can find other places where they ate, that's not the only alternative. Well, you know that they asked other people other than their husbands questions, and that wasn't wrong. That's not the only alternative. Surely you believe they could ask another preacher other than their husband, or they could have asked this older lady who was teaching them a question. And so it's obvious from the rest of the Bible that this whole phrase is not the only alternative. It's not a sin to ask the question at the restaurant or the barn. It's not a sin to ask somebody other than your husband a question. But what he's saying in 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35 is it is a sin to ask it in the church assembly. Now let me tell you somewhere you can ask it other than the church assembly. You can ask your husband at home. That's one thing you can do, but that's not the only thing. Just like he said in 1 Corinthians 11, 34, don't eat a common meal, a meal to satisfy your hunger, in the assembly. Instead, eat at home. He doesn't mean to be saying you can't eat at the restaurant. That's not what he's saying at all. He's saying don't ask it, don't eat in the assembly. That's the command. Now, let me tell you somewhere else you can eat, at home. He doesn't mean that, he's not meaning, though, you can't do it at a restaurant. Keith, I believe you believe that husbands here is not the only alternative. Now, you seem to indicate that, but I don't believe you believe that. And you know what the conclusion is, therefore? That 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 is not just talking to the prophets' wives. Because, see, he said that in attempt to bolster his position that this was only talking about the prophets' wives, those who were married to prophets. But now when that falls, then his whole point goes away. This is talking about any woman, whether she had a husband or not. But a lot of them did have husbands, so he could say, ask your husband at home. It's not saying that's the only person they could ask, and it's not saying that the house was the only place that they could ask it. And then he brought up this point, and put up number 5, Rodney. Not only is he saying this woman is a prophet wife because she had a husband, but he's saying only an inspired man could be relied upon for spiritual information. In Faith and Facts, he said it in his last speech, but he also said it in April 99 in Faith and Facts. In the first century, it would also have eliminated some women whose husbands were Christians. Since the complete written revelation of God was not yet available, meaning the New Testament, only those men who had the miraculous spiritual gift of prophecy could be relied upon for spiritual information. A woman whose husband did not have this gift could not have answered her questions. Now here's what Keith is doing. He's saying, let them ask their husbands at home proves that this is a woman that had a husband. But see, that's not good enough. We have plenty of women today who have husbands, so it would still apply today if that's all that he said. But now he's trying to prove that it's talking about a woman married to a prophet. So he's saying, this has got to be a husband who's inspired. Because since they didn't have the New Testament at that time, the only person who could have answered a Bible question reliably is a prophet. Keith, I don't believe you believe that. Now, I want you to think about this seriously, and we can talk afterwards or whatever. I don't think you believe that, that really an inspired preacher, a prophet, is the only one that could have answered a question reliably about the Bible. I'm going to give you some situations where I think you would agree that an uninspired man could have answered a Bible question back then and now. Okay? First of all, what if, as is the occasion many times, when you're preaching a sermon at the congregation where you're at, and perhaps the lady has to whisper to her child that, thank you, there's one little point of your lesson, but the husband, he got to hear the whole thing. And he's an uninspired man. Do you think it might be possible that the woman afterwards might ask her husband, you know, there was one point I missed in the lesson because I was having to deal with the kids. What was that the preacher said about this? That occurs all the time where I am. Doesn't it occur where you are? Well, then that could have happened back then. Here's an uninspired man with his wife in the assembly. The prophet, let's suppose it was a prophet, was preaching. She misses a little bit out of the sermon because she's dealing with the children. At home, then, she asks her husband, who's uninspired, what was that the preacher said about this, you see? She's asking a question to an uninspired man, and he could reliably give her the information if he was listening to the sermon. That happens today all the time, and certainly could have happened then. So this doesn't prove that the man, the husband, had to be a prophet. What if she were just to say in the assembly, hey, I was talking to the kid, and turn right to her husband sitting next to her out loud where everybody could hear. What was that he said? Well, that's what Paul's saying is not appropriate. She ought to ask, wait till after the assembly is over and ask her husband at home. And that would apply to an uninspired husband because she might have missed part of the sermon dealing with her kids. And here's another case. Let's suppose you had sit in that assembly a man who's uninspired and his wife is not a Christian. Okay, now let's just suppose the preacher preaching is inspired, a prophet, but here's an uninspired man sitting, and they don't have the New Testament, but now he's a Christian, she's not. Do you think, what if they got home and the woman asked her husband, I'm thinking about becoming a Christian. What do you have to do to become a Christian? Is it possible that uninspired man could answer that Bible question? I should hope so. If he can't answer that question, then he didn't know enough to become a Christian in the first place. See, so here we have an example that I think you will agree with, where the man is uninspired, the New Testament is not there at that time, but he could reliably answer a Bible question. In this case, a simple Bible question, one that he ought to know. If he became a Christian, he ought to know the answer to that question. So it's possible in that assembly that she could be talking about asking a question of her husband who's uninspired. Suppose this is a non-Christian lady sitting in the assembly and she wants to know, what do I have to do to be saved? One other point, Keith, and audience. They did have the Old Testament back then, Keith. You're right, they didn't have the complete New Testament revelation. Okay, and it would have been a little more difficult to answer questions, Bible questions, without the Bible sitting in front of you. I agree with that. But they could do it from the Old Testament. What if she had a question for her uninspired husband about the Old Testament? Then he could answer that question then just as easily as I can answer a question about the New Testament today, because he had the complete Old Testament at that time. You see, here's Keith's contention. His contention was that only the prophet could have reliably answered a Bible question. Therefore, 1 Corinthians 14:35, when it says the woman is to ask her husband at home, that had to be an inspired husband, a prophet. That's not true. I've just given you three cases where I think you will agree that an uninspired man could have answered a question. Okay? And so there is no proof there then that the husband in question is inspired or a prophet. Now that is critical to Keith's position, because it's not enough for him just to prove that this woman had a husband. We've got plenty of women today that have husbands, and so the passage would apply today. He's got to prove that it's an inspired husband, and since he'll say there are no prophets today, no inspired husbands, then there are no women, wives of prophets, therefore it doesn't apply today. But we've shown that his proof does not prove. There are many questions that could have been answered, many situations where it could have been answered by an uninspired man without the New Testament. Now, I'm saying this in a kind way. Don't take this in an unkind way. I just want you to consider, and I'm considering your points. Keith, this point is critical to your position. I believe your position is dependent upon this point, the argument made here. But I think we've shown the point to be absurd. Now, I don't mean that in an unkind way, but I just want you to consider that. I think this point, that this had to be a prophet, this husband, because only a prophet could have answered a Bible question. I think we've shown it to be absurd. And I want you to think about that. And remember that that point is critical to your position. In other words, if I take that away from you, if your point argument on that is not true, I don't see how your position could be proved. That's what I'm saying. Okay? Then he said that the men in context of verse 34, now let's go back to 1 Corinthians 14, of verse 34 when it says, let your women keep silence. He means the your. Obviously, well, he says it's talking about the wives of somebody. The men, he says, in the context are the prophets. Well, I know you don't consider this a debate such that you probably didn't respond to my point, so you probably didn't respond to my point on that because of the way you view this discussion, but I already made a point that responded to that. And what would have been good is if Keith had responded to the point I had made on the second person. You see, he's going back and reiterating that the your women, that is talking about the women of the prophets, but we've already pointed out that it's second person here. Therefore, it's talking about the Corinthians as a whole. And that in a letter to somebody, if you're referring to a select group of people, about somebody, you're talking about somebody, use third person. Use the second person to talk about the person you're talking to. That's the nature of second person and third person. First person is when I talk about me. Second person is when I talk about you, people I'm talking to. Third person is when I say, and President Clinton did this or that. He's not here. That's third person. He's not here. I'm not talking to him. Second person here in the Greek and the English. He's talking about the people he's talking to, the Corinthians, when he says, your women. Okay? Now, I made that point last time. And so I believe that your women there are talking about the Corinthian women. Put up number 11. A good question. What about singing? You got up number 11? My opponent thinks 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35 applied at that time to the prophets' wives. Correct? Do you think that it meant that the prophets' wives could not sing in the assembly? Remember, he thinks I have a problem. He says, Pat, your problem is if you take your position on 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, that would seem to contradict Ephesians 5, 19 and Colossians 3, 16. And I agree with you that women, then and now, can sing in the assembly. And we'll explain more why in a moment in the rest of the chart. But you've got the same problem I have unless you think that the prophets' wives could not sing in the assembly. Only women who were other than prophets' wives could sing. You see, unless you think that the prophets' wives could not sing in the assembly, you've got the exact same problem I've got. You're going to have to deal with this the same way I am, because you believe that the prophets' wives were not to speak, not to ask a question. Well, I could say, well, could they sing? Is that a contradiction? And you could say, well, that's kind of a difficult thing to answer. Well, I could say this about this. This is a difficult question. Let's delve into it. But you've got the same problem. But you don't think that the prophets' wives were forbidden from singing, do you? So you do have the same problem I do. Now here's how I respond to that and how I answer that. Perhaps we can discuss this informally later, how you deal with it, because all of us have to deal with this question. Why does 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 not forbid a woman from singing? Is there a contradiction or what? We all have to deal with that. Even Keith has to deal with that. I don't believe, here's the way I deal with it, I don't believe that singing is speaking to the assembly. Now I know that the same word speaking, and Keith brought this up, the same word speaking is used in Ephesians 5:19 to refer to singing, but I believe that that's an unusual or accommodative use of the word speak. And let me explain. For example, both Keith and I, we agree on this in 1 Timothy 2. We could say this, women are not to teach men in the church assembly. He may have said that before. I'm sure he has in his lifetime. And I've said it. Women are not to teach men in the church assembly. We agree on this. But, you know, if I were to say that, I wouldn't mean that women could not teach men reverence for God in the assembly by their example. What I would mean by they could not teach men is that they're not to verbally teach the men in the church assembly. But we know that teach is used sometimes in an accommodative sense. We can teach by our example, and it's not verbal. Do you follow what I'm saying? So there are unusual uses or accommodative uses for words. And if I were to say women are not to teach men in the assembly, I would not have in mind teaching by example. Yes, I do think they're to teach men by example in the assembly. They can teach reverence to men who need to learn that. Now, I believe teach by example, since normally when we think of teach, we think of a verbal teaching, okay? But teach by example is not verbal. That's an accommodated use of the word teach. The reason it's accommodative is not verbal, but people are learning from you by your example. But not because you said words to them, just because they see how you live. And so we use the word teach because people are learning from our example. And so we use the word teach. Even though normally the word teach means something verbal. Now, let me give you another illustration. By my opponent's reasoning, a woman could divorce her husband for sexual lust simply because lust is called adultery in Matthew 5:28. In Matthew 5:28, it says, whoever looks upon a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery already in his heart. Now, Keith, I believe by your reasoning that you made and the fact that Ephesians 5:19 uses the word speak, and what about, you've got a contradiction, Pat, because 1 Corinthians 14 forbids speaking, then you would have to say that Matthew 5:28, a man or a woman could divorce her husband for sexual lust. I don't think that's the point of Matthew 5:28. Yes, it's adultery, but it's adultery in the mind. It's not physical, literal adultery, and that's the thing that a woman can divorce her husband for. But the same word is used. The same word is used, okay? It's an accommodative use of the word adultery. It's not actual physical sexual intercourse. It's doing it in your mind. Now, one other example. Raise it up, Rodney. These are just illustrations. They don't really prove anything. They just illustrate the point that I'm making. Do you know that Barbara Streisand, of course, is a singer, but did you know she likes to lecture? She's an advocate for homosexuals, by the way. What if I said to my wife, I went to hear Barbara Streisand speak? Now, do you think my wife would think that I went to hear Barbara Streisand sing or her lecture? Well, if I said I went to hear Barbara Streisand speak, I think my wife would think you went to hear her lecture, not sing, because sing, the normal use of that would mean you got a melody there, you know, and the normal use for speak means you're talking without melody. As a matter of fact, if you look at the word speak in the English dictionary, not the Greek, but the English, it will say speaking without the melody. Okay, I don't remember the exact words. I don't have the dictionary with me. But if you look that up in Webster's. Now, and so though I agree that Ephesians 5:19 uses the same word, I believe it's an accommodative use for the word speak. And Paul did not have singing in mind when he said the woman is not to speak in the assembly. He did not have singing in mind. Just like when we say speak today, we normally don't mean sing. We normally don't include that. But we might, if we were using the word accommodatively, we might. Now, additionally, I want to add to this, sort of a separate point in addition to it. I agree with you that singing, that these passages teach, that singing was done by women in the assembly. Okay? And that's why I struggle, and everybody struggles, with 1 Corinthians 14 and singing in the assembly and women. Okay? Because we agree that these passages teach that women sing in the assembly. But I can't find any passage that says that a woman was to speak in the assembly. Meaning, I mean speaking but not singing. Like making an announcement. Okay? Or some of the things we might disagree on. Like what were some of the things we disagree on? I have asking a question in the assembly. Making comments if the opportunity is provided. Those are the things that you and I disagree on. I don't see any example or teaching where they are to do that. I don't see any example or teaching where a woman is to confess Christ in the assembly. If I found that, then I'd have to say, well, maybe that would be an exception to 1 Corinthians 14, but I don't find that. Or confessing her sins in the assembly. I don't find anywhere that's even taught or an example of it done in the assembly. Or making announcements, as I said, asking a question, any of that. And we're going to get to Acts 5 in just a moment. Now, let me move on. If my opponent is right that singing comes under the censor of 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35, and we're wrong that these passages allow or command women to sing in the assembly, then what we're going to have to do, that wouldn't mean that women can speak in the assembly. That would just mean that women today would have to quit singing in the assembly. Okay? That is, if these passages don't teach that women are to sing in the assembly, and if 1 Corinthians 14, if he's right, that this would forbid singing, then we're just going to have to give up women's singing. But I don't believe those, and that's why I don't give up women's singing. But if I did believe that, I would exhort the women not to sing in the assembly. But I don't believe that. All right, click the next one, Rodney. Number 10. Now, he's going to go into this example of Acts chapter 5, and he talked about the collection being done in the assembly. And the reason he did that is because Acts chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, shows a collection being done in, I almost said in the assembly. I don't believe we know that for sure, but it shows a collection, without a doubt. Now, everybody hold their hand in Acts 5 and look at 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. In 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, it says, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no other gatherings when I come." Keith, I believe you've got the controversy wrong here. Okay? What Christians have been saying through the years is that this passage requires a collection into a common treasury. Okay? And the people who are objecting to that today, they're not saying, well, it doesn't have to be done in the assembly. What they're saying is that they can just lay by at home at their own house and then just give to the poor as they see need, which usually those people end up giving very little to people who are in need. And that's just an excuse to get out of giving. The objection is not the assembly. That wasn't the question. The question is, does it have to be into a common treasury, or can it be done at home and so I can just give to the poor as I see need? That's the controversy. We have taught, it doesn't really matter what we've taught through the years, but I'm just telling you about the controversy since you brought up. We have taught that it has to be into a common treasury. I've heard preachers preach that. And that this verse proves it. Because if they could lay by in store at home, then Paul would have to gather when he came. That's the point, okay? But no, but you're the first one I've ever heard say in my life that the collection had to be done in the assembly. I've never heard that taught. That's never been required. That's just... what number is that? Number 10? I wrote this on my notes. Actually, that's just been done traditionally that way. That's the only thing. Would you think, for example, this congregation came together on the first day of the week, would it be wrong if they had a box up on the wall, out in the hall, and when people were, say, out in the foyer after the services or before, they just dropped their collection all in the same box? I never thought that would be wrong. And I've never heard of a preacher who thought that would be wrong, that it had to be done in the assembly. You see, in the assembly, we just do that out of convenience because it does say the first day of the week. We're going to come together on the first day of the week. We might as well have the collection in the assembly, and we pass the plate. But you could just assume, you could just have the plate over here and everybody walk by the plate and stick your money in there. You don't have to pass the plate down the pews. You could have the box outside on the wall and everybody do it before the assembly or after the assembly. The point of 1 Corinthians 16, and this is the point the brethren have been making through the years, is that it has to be done into a common treasury. The church has some money that they decide how to spend. Not just everybody lay by and store at home. But I need to hurry. And so Acts 5, 1 and 2 isn't necessarily in the assembly. It is a collection, but it isn't necessarily in the assembly. But let's suppose Acts 5, 1 and 2, it was the assembly. Let's suppose it were the assembly. That doesn't prove that Sapphira spoke in the assembly. Let's look at my chart. Because the contextual evidence strongly suggests that the assembly had broken up, if there was one in verses 1 and 2, at least by the time Sapphira spoke out. Now remember, this says that Ananias told a lie, but it doesn't record him telling the lie. It happened sometime between verses 2 and 3, evidently. There are a lot of things in this passage that are not recorded, including Ananias' lie. We don't verbally see his lie. Now, any assembly, if there was one in verses 1 and 2, was certainly broken up by verse 8. Verse 7 says that three hours...